those standing splits. I'll work this later. I don't see the, I think I have to download stuff, so. So Bear One is considered, Warrior One is considered a slight back bend, it is a standing pose, but it's got upper bodies and a back bend. Crescent lunge is kind of like the prep pose, it is, not kind of, it is the prep pose for Bear One. These are all asymmetrical poses, Parsvottanasana pyramid pose, revolved triangle, revolved half moon, and standing splits. They have that all in that family. Okay, so when you're doing, when you're prepping, let's say Surya B's, Surya Namaste B's, Warrior One from there, oftentimes people will do crescent poses to prep you for those, right? Because you're opening up your hip flexors. So sagittal plane.
What page?
I'm just in the
sample pose.
The beginning when we talked about families of poses.
Oh, you went back?
Yeah, I just went back for a second. Yeah.
Warriors.
Yeah, these.
I'm just here.
Family
pose. 118. 118.
116 pose families and then 117, 118.
Yes.
Okay, so oftentimes, yeah, like this morning, I had to step into a lunge, right? So these low lunges are press for high lunges, which are crescents, which is a prep for Warrior One. That's why they're all in the same family. They look pretty similar. But the lunges are neutral pelvis. There's no twisting. There's nothing happening on the back leg. It's still neutral until I get to Bear One, and then the back leg turns out externally slightly. Okay, you see that? Right. Upper body, still into the asana, as much as I can be, but because I am moving my torso to face forward, it is a slight rotation in the rib cage, and naturally most people will go into a back bend if they're tight in their hip flexors. It is a back bend too. This is where we get into like, it can be considered a prep pose for back bending. Because as you can see, your body is back bending, right? Right, you're good. Now I'm a big rib cage person, I gotta stop my rib. So that can be the pose. Now if someone's like this and they're here, that's fine. Just let them be there. Maybe they have a bad back. They can still do the pose and have more of a Tadasana torso. And not make it a back bend, right? But the full pose is a slight arch in the upper spine, thoracic. Here, we can lessen that back bend by doing something like bending the back knee if the hip flexors are tight. And then it's just upright in the Tadasana crescent pose. Right? And Tadasana here. So when we talk about these poses, we talk about the legs again a lot, but we talk about less about external rotation because we're not rotating the hip flexor out. Usually in this pose, you step into it with a neutral pelvis. So we talk about the front leg in all of these poses. This front leg is not rotated. In Warrior Two, the front leg is externally rotated. That's why it's an external pose. In Warrior One, the front leg is neutral. That's why it's a neutral pose. Does that make sense?
Yes.
We're always talking about the front leg. There are different things going on with the back leg, but as they're categorized, front leg is what we're talking about. Whenever your knee is bent, the weight is in the heel. Whenever your knee is bent, so the front leg, the weight's in the heel, in any pose. So that you don't front load the weight in your knee. That hurts the knee joints. You never want to be in your toes here when you bend your heel. When your leg is straight, and let's say Parsvottanasana, the weight is in the toe. the weight is in the toes. In a straight leg pose, the weight is in the toe. And I'm talking about the front leg. Okay? Because the back leg, in most poses, the back leg, the weight's square. Where's the weight in the foot?
On the outside of the foot.
Yeah, in the heel on the outer side of the foot. And that goes for any pose, right? Warrior two, where's the weight in the back foot?
In the heel.
In the heel, on the outer edge of the foot. Same thing for warrior one, back leg, weight in the heel. So when we're talking about changing the weight, we're talking about changing the weight in the front foot. Straight leg poses. Weights in the front foot, the front of the foot. Bent knee poses, weights in the heel. Okay? Where? I want to impress upon that.
Is the weight in the outer part of the back foot because you want to activate that long line?
Yeah, it's because I really want to not collapse the feet.
Gotcha. Protect the arch.
If I roll my weight inward, I collapse the arch, it affects my knee. If I put the weight on the outer leg, it stays in Tadasana. Does that make sense?
Perfect.
Good.
Yeah.
You'll see this a lot. I see that a lot. They're like rolling. It's because they're like really trying to open their hip flexor, but they're not doing anything. We're just right there. So let's get that weight back to the back leg.
Do you do hip flexor openers to prepare for that then? Depending on what you see in class,
mm-hmm.
right?
Hip flexor opener. We can always hip flexor openers.
Uh-huh.
Right? This is our culture.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's good.
Right? So, yeah. Anything to open up these is great. All the time. Parsvottanasana. I'll do it with blocks for a second. So, we're stepping asymmetrically in the sagittal plane. Hips are neutral. They didn't twist, they didn't go anywhere. The back leg is angled slightly. It's really for balance. The back leg is usually typically angled slightly. It's usually for balance. Okay. So you're in this pose, Tadasana torso again, right? I'm forward folding. So this can be considered also a forward fold. The reason why they're putting it in Virabhadrasana family is because you're here. You can transition to here. You'd maybe walk the back foot in slightly, but you're basically in the pose already. So that's why they're together. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
This is a variation. The full pose is arms behind you and reverse prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And then you come down. Hip flexion. We're flexing at our hip joint. We're not bending at the waist. You'll see this. This is Bikram. Letting you know, this is alignment-based vinyasa yoga, so hinging at the hips, lengthen. So forward fold, we're lengthening our spine into Tadasana. Just want to give you that because you'll go to Bikram and you'll go, but when Bikram, you go like this and then round all the way down. That's fine. Just do that in Bikram. The inner thigh of the back leg is rolling in. It's again, the action, the subtle action is internal rotation. This front hip, the subtle action is firming the hips. Really, firming both hips. These glutes, this is what we want to do, the outer glutes, glute meats. Okay, so that's why they're paired together. And that's why also this pose is paired with them there. Parvrita, right hand now, flat back, right? Flat. Lift the chest, twist. I'm touching the sacrum because that's my path of least resistance. Lift your chest, open. Yeah. So now I'm going to twist. But my legs are still in Parsvottanasana. This is Revolve Triangle. Parvrita Trikonasana. Okay. Then they also have, I believe, standing. Twisting Ardha Chandrasana and standing splits. Standing split. Yeah? Vira 3 sometimes is paired with that. I'm just going to give myself a little break for a second. So Parvrita Ardhachandrasana, similar. Lat back, quote, forward, and turn. See why they're all kind of paired together? Mm-hmm. I could step back, I'd be in Parsvottanasana or involve triangle. So that's why they're all together. They have a similar body movements, same legs. When you're pairing things together, you want to have similar structure so that you're using the same muscle groups. Does that make sense? Because mm-hmm. It would be too hard to pair like an externally rotated pose like Warrior Two with something like where you had to change the rotation in your hip. You want to come out of hip rotation, get to neutral, and then do the other hip rotation. But to not be in the same, to mix them would be difficult. And the exception is when people say Warrior One to Warrior Two. That was common in the past. I rarely hear it anymore, but people will do it. Because Warrior One, neutral. Warrior Two, external. We open out. There's a lot going on actually when you do this. Most people don't know the actual instruction. You say Warrior One, Warrior Two, as a teacher, and everyone goes, okay. Now, what has to happen here is you're rotating your pelvis to now external, which is a lot of work. Then you also have to move your leg, and you have to realign your feet. And then you're in Warrior Two. So it's a several step process. And that it requires a lot on the SI joint. When I practiced that for years, Warrior One, Warrior Two, Warrior One, Warrior Two, in vinyasa, that's where I got most of my SI joint dysfunction. When I stopped doing it, I had no SI joint pain. So I'm a firm believer of that, but you'll still see it. So that's the exception you'll see a lot in vinyasa. Okay, everybody, Warrior One, exhale, open up to Warrior Two. There's no instruction. And so if you don't know what's going on, people are like moving their feet all around, their hips all around. That's why you get to Warrior Twos like this. You know, people don't know what to do with the hips. So it's like, I usually instruct people when they open out to move their foot, because I do finger ground up, to the center of the mat first. Then they turn their hips out, reposition the back foot longer, turn the heel, there's a lot going on, and then see if they're in it, you know? And then I go around and I kind of instruct the pose. It's quite a lot to have to do in your body. That's why I say, teach Warrior Two, triangle, side angle together, as a pose family, which is what they say in this book. And then things like crescent, Warrior One, lunges, maybe some twisting poses together. Separate them. So when you get to sequencing, you'll see that in the sequences. And it's quite common now in most vinyasas to do it that way. But people do starting on their A's, they'll do external hip openers like Warrior Two, because they're building muscle strength, opening up the hips. Then they'll do B's because it has Warrior One in it, and chair pose, all neutral in the front leg. Then they'll do crescents, crescent twists, Warrior Ones, Parsvottanasana, some of the twists that I just showed you. Then, that's like the two sets of standing sequences. Then they'll go into other things like back bends or inversions or whatever the peak-ish poses are. Does that make sense?
Could you repeat that?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. And we'll do this also in sequencing, when I do sequencing with you guys. But essentially, one way you could look at it is starting with warm-up poses, doing sun salutation A's, then doing those externally rotated hip opening standing poses, which is in the category of Warrior Two, triangle, side angle pose, Ardha Chandrasana half moon is one of those. Then you might do some standing balance poses, perhaps, if your class is up for that. Like into things like back bends, inversions, because those are the categories of big poses. And then eventually after that stuff, you gotta come down the mountain. So that's like the peak. This is very broad stroke in general, but that would be the peak. Then you might have twists. Again, core twists can happen anywhere. They're like preps for everything. Can never have a core. Twists are great for a lot of reasons. They're like neutralizers. Kind of like a vinyasa in between poses is a neutralizer. Like, that's why a lot of people teach, like, after you do a bunch of poses, then you go and you do a vinyasa, because it resets your spine and your energy. And then you go to the next thing. And then you've got forward bends. We're going to talk about forward bends now. After this, they cool you down. And then you might have a cooling inversion at the end, maybe not. Hip openers at the end. Hip openers are, like, great for all sorts of reasons. They're also calming, seated ones. And then Shavasana. You always have your Shavasana.
What's a vinyasa?
A vinyasa is Surya Namaskar A.
Oh, you mean like do a whole flow sequence in between.
I
see.
In between pose sets, if you want to call them pose sets. It resets the spine.
I see.
Some people, you know, I give them the option. If I say, hey, we're going to do vinyasa, I'll just say, give yourself permission if you don't want to go through chaturanga, and just step back to down dog and hold that while other people are moving through the pose. And that might mean for some people a child's pose in between. These are all good, like, neutralizing poses that relax people in between. And you can take those at any time. Give yourself permission to go to child's pose whenever you want. So that's why these guys are all together. They're asymmetrical poses, right? There's things moving in that sagittal plane. The legs are not together in Tadasana. They're asymmetrical. Everybody ate lunch and was like... Alright, wake yourself up. Wake yourself up. Can we do a little shaking practice? Alright. Are you winding up?
I am.
Are you doing coffee?
Yeah.
Oh, certainly you. Yeah, you're the only one.
I'm going.
Processing your
coffee. Coffee sample. I smudge coffee.
Oh,
I'm breathing.
So three. I was going to say, you know, you guys look different than the rest
one
of
us. 1 inch of coffee.
Yeah, good.
So sunshine.
Little extra boost. Okay. So, any questions so far? Is any of this confusing? Because now is a good time to bring it up, because if you have a question, somebody else has a question too.
Well, my only thing is that I couldn't keep up with everything you were just saying, but I didn't think it, I feel like it's not a big deal because
right.
You're going to be going
I will repeat this shit all day long every time I'm with you.
So that whole sequencing thing was like, okay, I got some of it and the others will sync.
Yeah, it'll be like talking jive for a while. And I'll be talking Sanskrit and other things. That's okay. I don't mind.
No, I mean, we'll have this recording.
Oh,
okay. Natalie's actually going to send him out.
Oh, okay. We have a recording. Okay.
I thought I was going to be able to remember everything you said, you know, like when we did that practice. And then, like, when I was trying to teach her, it's like, what's the words I use?
Right.
I knew what I wanted her to do, but, like, what's
right.
the words to cue?
Yeah, so cueing is, cueing's like, could be a whole day in and of itself, where it's just learning some of the repetitive cues, right? Like, learning how to set it up.
I mean, you know, I've been in yoga classes so much, and heard the cueing so much, that really I thought it would just flow, but I'm like, what's that word?
Yeah, so now...
What's the words I use?
Right, now really pay attention to it. Every time you go to a class, really listen to what the teachers are saying. How are they setting up the pose? What are their words? Because everybody's words are different. At Yoga Works, we were given, like, literally cueing instructions for every single pose. We didn't, like, memorize it all. And it's, I mean, They also made you take the classes, which you guys have to do. So when you're in your classes, just start to really listen. What is she instructing, or he? What is he or she instructing? How did they ask me to open up my feet? Or what did they ask me to do with my legs? And just really listen. Start to really listen to the cueing and how it's landing in your body. Some instructors are less alignment focused. They might just say, warrior two. And then just assume that some people can get into that, and that's okay. That's their style. So I want you to start to, you know, take away some of the judgments that you might have. As a teacher, trainer, I get really judgy of this saying. Like, I do, because I have so much knowledge in my body, and I have to give it up and be like, everybody's got a different style. They don't have to teach all that stuff. They don't. It's not required. It's the stuff I know, right? And that's okay. And then there were times when I first started where I didn't know it all that stuff, and I only taught the Sanskrit names the way I was taught in my first training. Was you just say the Sanskrit name of the pose, and everybody knows what it is, and then you sit in it and you count the breath. That's a totally different style of teaching. That's how I learned the Sanskrit. But, you know, so it's like I've built my teaching practice based on many. I mean, now I've done, I mean, I don't even know how many trainings, right?
So were you?
I mean, I can't even count. Well, I can count, but it's like 10 or 12 or 15 or something trainings, full 200-hour training.
Cool.
So it's like, you know, obviously at some point you start, you pick habits too. Like I have habitually what I say in poses that other teachers may say something different. And not all teachers will step you out the way I did to teach Warrior Two.
I love that you're walking us through these poses though, because I think it's going to be so much more important that we feel each of those changes in our body.
Yeah, you have to feel it in your body.
Yeah.
That's the best advice that I could give anybody about their yoga practice. Practice the poses in your body. Talk them out loud in your own body. Because if it doesn't land in your body, we were talking about embodiment yesterday, if it doesn't land in your body, you're never going to remember any of it. You'll be like out here, you know, in the ethers, right? So if it makes sense for you to say firm your right hip in, then use it. If it doesn't, then what would you say that makes sense for you? Because that's what you'll teach, is what makes sense for your body. And that's why people teach what they know in their body. Which is why she teaches restorative and gentle, because she does that in her body. She may not ever want to teach a vinyasa class. She's just learning the poses just to know them, right? So that's okay. But what's interesting about all the poses is just how they work the body and to get more intimate with your body and to learn about your own body and what you need for your body. Right? Like there's certain poses that, like, I love. Like twisting to me is like, those are like my favorite poses.
Mm-hmm.
I love twists. Like I geek out on twisting. I just love them. They work well for my body for some reason. I love them. So whatever you like, do that. And then eventually, if you decide to work in a studio where you have to kind of up your game and teach something different, then you challenge yourself. Like, try doing some sequences. To do that with your own body. I used to practice every sequence that I would write out. I would practice it that morning, and then I would teach it. Because then I knew what would come up in people's bodies before I knew how to read bodies. I'd be like, oh, well, in my body, that felt weird, so I'll address that in class. You know, in my body, I might need to pull in my belly to protect my lower back, because that's my tendency. Maybe that's you. You know, just kind of thread things in like that.
Mm-hmm.
And people appreciate that because they're like, oh, she just told us a little bit about her body. I wonder if that's what my body feels like. And people like inquire about their body that way. You know, ask questions. You might feel this pose. You know, instead of like you're feeling this because we don't know what people are feeling, you might feel this way. Maybe you do that. Maybe that. But don't get too wishy-washy either. Like, I don't give permission for everyone to just do their own practice. Like, I need to order the structure, I'm teaching something. So, if you have an injury, I understand. But if the majority of people are there, like, I'm going to be like, okay, we're going to do this pose, we're doing this pose. And if someone's, like, not doing it, I'll be like, is there a reason that you're not doing this pose that you can explain to me? Or, because sometimes they're not paying attention.
Uh-huh.
They're like, oh, yeah, I'm injured. And I'm like, oh, great, thanks for telling me. But if they're like, oh, no, you know, sometimes they're like, oh, is that where we were? Hello! So yeah, it's like we get out of focus, right? So
Do you check in at the beginning of your class to see if there's any injuries that people want to talk about?
Yes, I always do. Yeah. And half the people will never tell me about their injuries. So I go up to someone to adjust them and go, oh my God, don't touch that, I have an injury. I'm like, thanks for telling me. Okay. You know, I don't know, it's not about me, but I'm like, thank you for telling me. It's great if you can tell the teacher up front so we can adjust you properly. Yeah, just I say things very matter-of-factly, and I try not to make people feel like they're being judged. It's just like, oh, great, okay, no problem.
Yeah. Do you have a way for, so like the cueing that you're talking about using your own personal experience and bringing that forth, and then looking at the other side of the spectrum where a cue could have been tuck the tailbone, and then you could have someone who already is like super flexible in that range, so then they're tucking even more because they're hearing that cue, which, like what I was thought I might be observing with her, and how you said, I don't know what, I don't remember what you said, shore it up, or like, but I'm thinking of it as like the whole thing is drawing into center, and that, so I'm curious if you, off the top of your head, could share how you.
I think I know what you're asking, tell me if I'm wrong, but is how do you cue when there's all these different bodies in the room? Some people are going to be overdoing it, and some people are not going to be doing it, right? So if these are cues that are generalized, and then there's going to be people that you may need to go up to individually and talk to. Like if I were seeing that she were tucking a lot and I were giving a specific instruction and it wasn't landing with her, I'd walk over to her and I'd say, for you, right, for you, because it's for her only, lengthen your tailbone or find a little arch in your lower back instead of tucking. And then she might come back to neutral and be like, that's it. You know, but I would talk to her about that separately. Or I would say, or if I noticed that everybody in the room is doing something the same, I'd say, okay, this is for everybody. And sometimes I'll just also be teaching and talking, and I might go over to her and just do it with my hand, like a hands-on adjustment to establish that with her while I'm saying other things to other people. But that's like down the road when we can multitask that way, okay? Don't worry about that right now. Just general cues for most people's bodies, and we're trying to like get the general ones for most people's bodies, and then the anomalies, like let's say you're an anomaly because you're having an injury, you might be an anomaly because you're hyperextending, then you walk over and address them separately. Because they would have different cueing. They would.
Yeah.
Is that kind of what you're asking?
Yeah, that's part of it, but I think that you have a cue that names that out to the whole group that you said earlier that was something to the effect of like, containing it, or like I have draw in towards center line, which to me is like also middle path, integrity, healthfully contained, so that there's, do you know?
Yeah, like firming in.
Yeah, that's what you said.
Firming in,
okay.
Firming in. We don't always firm our hips in, because that creates stability. In most standing poses, if you have that action of firming the outer hips in, it's going to create that centering effect that you were talking about, and some stability. Because people can tend to be, women especially can be loose in their hips. You know, it's just a natural way that our energy is in our second chakra. So this like kind of loose, or you know, well, like I'll say generally we can be, but there's of course rigidity too. But and so to find that movement inward to the center line is really good for every pose, especially standing balance poses. It gives you that sense of, again, stability. It's really stability. And then with that stability, you start to be able to trust your body more, trust the earth more, and you can literally get more length and more elongation in your spine. That's that root down, rebound up. So, yeah. I think that's maybe what I said. Firming in the side hips, the glutes.
I've noticed a lot of teachers start off with the one that will most apply to everyone, whatever the positioning changes, and then I'm always the one they identify and do exactly. They walk over and go, for you,
yeah.
Do not sink in more than two and come up. So I'm just trying to pull up instead of go down.
Yeah.
In a lunge, I'm supposed to pull up. And
Yeah.
You know, my tendency is just to drop halfway and almost all the way to the floor.
Yeah. If you're, mobility, because you have a lot of hip mobility.
And so I need to strengthen. So that's the building of the strength
versus
the pushing down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. good to know your body, you know? Good to know your body. So any questions? So Parsvottanasana, let's maybe, and then we have Revolved Triangle. You guys want to teach each other Warrior One? And what I realize and recognize is at some point we'll need to also learn hands-on adjustments. There's so much to learn. And I don't know yet, maybe I'll show you some minimal hands-on adjustments for some of those external poses that we did that are just like really quick ones, in and outs, and also for the neutral poses. Okay? Alright, so let's break up into pairs. And if you're not doing the pose, maybe make a three pair. And then just step them. Let's do, we'll start in down dog. Okay? Because typically that's where you'll start for this pose. Lift your right leg up. Step your foot in between your hands. Ankle underneath knee. Turn the back heel down. You're in these asymmetrical poses, your heel-to-heel alignment or wider. See how I'm a little bit wider? You will see railroad tracks on my invisible mat.
And that's with your
heel-to-heel. Front
hip is square? Or
front hip is in, yeah, it's neutral.
As opposed to two, yeah.
Yeah. And then I'm coming up. Pelvis is lifting up off the thighs. Arms up alongside the ears and external rotation. Okay, so now, when I work this pose, I'm going to protect the knee, right? Any bent leg pose, the knee is the emergency. That's what we looked at first. Any bent leg pose, knee is the emergency. That's the one that's considered the mobile one. It's moving. Back leg is the stability. Moving, bent leg. Back leg, stability. Moving, front leg. Back leg, stability. I'll say this a couple times so that you just remember. Okay? So this is the one, if it's a moving joint, that is at risk. Make sense? So you're gonna work them in this pose. Eventually, the chest rotates forward. It's not squaring with the hips. Do my hips look square? Uh-uh. They're twisted in the transverse plane. Okay, because that back leg is external. I'm gonna keep using these terms. But my rib cage is turning. My rib cage is turning. My rib cage is square. So there's these terms that people say in classes, you'll hear them. They'll be like, oh, she said never say that. I'll be like, well, that's because they're old school. Like, there's some phrases that we used to use that are just not anatomically correct. So we're trying to change those. As if I'm like some governing body of yoga. We're all trying to change. Arms alongside the ears. Arms alongside the ears. And if this is really uncomfortable for people in their backs, then have their arms forward. I teach it like this sometimes for beginners. I teach this thing where I put the arm forward, I can reach that arm forward so it takes that left side waist with them. Go like this, something like this. And I like to make those noises too. Alright. Okay? Wanna try it?
Mm-hmm. So from down dog into Virabhadrasana one?
Yeah.
What we're doing. And do we teach down dog all the details of it or just
no,
say
just
down
for
dog?
Now, just step up in between their hands. And teach the legs. Mm-hmm. Teach the legs and get them up into the pose. And then teach that slight rotation of the chest and arms alongside the ears. We'll just keep them
going. I need to teach that because I can't do any more poses.
Yeah, you just observe this guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to? Yeah. Do you want to get into like a three pair or four pair? Don't be nervous when I'm coming around. You can say nothing and I'd be like, you did great.
Down and dog
until
first.
Oh,
okay.
You.
Okay.
And I don't remember the transition.
Okay. So you're gonna get down more time.
Lift your right leg up.
Okay.
Lift your right leg up.
Lift your right leg up. Step forward with your right leg in
between your hands.
Your hands.
Yes.
Your
hips.
Yes. I make a lot of noise.
From your
get yourself some nice firming and
turn your door. Go back to down dog.
Sorry, I interrupted.
Oh, I'm sorry. So I want you to just say firming into your core, suck your belly up
and
into your spine,
your hands.
And then rise.
That's
up
right.
In power.
Now you're going to lower your left
good. Arms,
foot, ankle, foot down.
Heel.
Your left heel down.
Good.
And you're going to rise
and make your chest taller.
Using your abdominal muscles.
And
rise
shift
up
this.
Your, straight up.
This,
your
I'm going to touch you.
Oh, go right ahead.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I want
looking
you to bring
the leg
in. Bring that thigh in.
And that's a pretty long stance.
Yeah, it's pretty long. Yeah.
So she could even shorten it.
Why
she's yeah, that's why
back.
She could.
Yeah, good.
Okay, shorten it, yeah.
Good.
I don't see any corrections to make.
That's okay.
She might be in it.
There you go.
Very good.
Good.
That was my.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
okay,
so
nice.
Body
so
breakers.
Back down.
I mean, she's not too really like
down.
However, you
do
like.
I can't remember how to do that.
Back and down. It gives her more length in her torso.
Yeah.
But
other
than and then
Christine,
do you want to go like drop
her on
the
other
side so she's
in?
She looks good in it.
Yeah.
Are
you
okay
to keep going?
Your traps,
keep
are you okay
to keep going?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
okay,
these
cool.
Are things you're
going
to
do.
Let's
see.
Just
getting the words out. Lift the leg.
Bring your
step
right leg in an inch or so.
Who else wants
to
do
that?
Lift your left leg up.
Balance yourself. Do the other side.
And then shift
lift
your
that
weight
left
forward
up.
And bring your foot
swing
in between
your
hands.
Hands.
Push
right
off the
right
floor with your left foot. Engage.
You
oh, wait, that
put
other foot is important.
Right
foot.
Tell
you
forward. You're going to rise up.
You turn it out. No, you brought your heel forward.
Strong.
Is that right? Heel forward comes out. No, wait, that's not true.
And
you're going to
relax your traps.
If you went this way.
Perfect.
So she just turned her toes out.
You can lift your
her
pelvic.
So it's heel
your,
in. So she
heel
turns her heel down.
Down.
Turn your heel down.
Yeah.
That's what I call pelvic.
That's down.
Because it's in a lunge, right?
You wanna, yeah.
And then you turn your heel down.
Down. Okay.
Heel goes down. Yeah.
Down.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Now we need your core. And then push off of your left foot and
stretch
up.
Starting from downward dog, lift your right foot toward the ceiling and
how does your
right foot through your
a little
hands,
bit like away.
Away? Yeah, you want to bring it in a little bit.
Left heel
uh-huh.
to the ground.
How does it feel?
And
just a little bit better now.
Now rise up using your core.
How do you
yeah,
get down?
Let's
see. Like yeah, just do it in your body if you need to, right?
Say, can you
reach towards that front wall
and bow down.
Square off your
body. Yeah, I didn't even talk about
and
that.
Spread your fingers out.
Yeah, but I'll talk
and
about it. So anytime
your left
and your
left,
up,
your right
okay.
back into down.
And
you're
kind of folding
your
down. And so usually that's it for healing. Yeah, we haven't even entered healing.
And calm down. Of course, when you're ready.
Basic steps.
Thank you.
And then tell your partners if there's something missing, right? Like,
oh,
you lost the heel on the ground.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
Okay, do you want to?
What? Well, so lots of things about
it. Stretch me. Yeah.
Okay. And you push up into down dog. And we're facing dog.
For her, she's got to keep those knees bent, so let her keep those knees bent.
Okay. Lift up your left leg.
Okay, so for a downward dog.
Now bring your left leg
lift
forward
your
up
left
your hands. Which your hands.
I have to do this.
Oh,
yeah.
No. Just be careful. Just
do
you can stay in the modified version of this. Okay? Okay, Rochelle?
Do you want?
You can stay in a modified version.
Okay.
Just let her do it with the knee.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And so, what do you want me to do now?
Oh.
No.
Oh.
You're instructing me.
I'm just giving permission because her back hurts and stuff. I want to just give her a single. You can take her up into crescent if she's okay with that. But just look at her front knee and make sure that I want it. Okay. You can bring your left foot forward.
With
the front line, your heel on your knee.
Want her to press in?
Like a little bit up and into your knee.
muscles.
Because it didn't strike me so externally. That if you were you talking about the roundness
versus what you got out of your back here.
This.
So just giving that at what
arm down
when
you make it harder.
Her neck was crunchy, so I did external, and that gives you this.
So you want to always just have it to bring your knee over your ankle.
And is there a cue for the eyes?
I would just look forward, because she's still in her traps.
So the top of the head, where your crown's over.
Just look forward.
Yeah, just go forward, you know? Yeah, forward, chin parallel to the floor.
Like the palm.
This is how you learn. This is how you learn.
this is so hard to teach because it's all these externals. But warrior two is an externally rotated toes, like the front leg. We're always talking about the front leg. The front leg is externally rotated at the hip joint. Okay? The back leg's still in Tadasana. Right? Because look. These are Tadasana legs, right? My feet are together, Tadasana. All I'm doing is stepping wide, and not rotating. Until I then use an externally rotated front leg to come into triangle or warrior two or side back.
Do you think
that leg is still in Tadasana
or my cross?
Good question.
But
I feel like
warrior one, the front leg is neutral. Right?
Yes.
Tadasana, nothing's changed in this layer. But the back leg opens out slightly. But remember, when we're categorizing horses,
this is the first day I understood why you would never get a warrior when it's two not
coming out.
They're not at all similar. That's why it's confusing when people do warrior one to warrior two, because they're actually not in the same pose category. It's actually not taught that way.
I've definitely been taught that way. So
It's still taught that way, but that was like the old version until they started to realize how complicated it was.
I was so pretty popular around my sister. Memorize it.
Right.
And that's okay. Because I take everything through my body.
Yeah. It's just I don't
body. Like, that's how I had to teach for a while. I would do almost the whole class with the class, and because that was the way that I began to speak the language, is I could translate it from my body to the class. And if I wasn't able to do that, I'd get really flat. So I did the class, actually, with the class. And then, one day, I got up off my mat and really was like, I gotta look at bodies and see what other people are doing so I can help them. And I have to learn how to articulate this without doing the practice, too. Especially when you get injured, because then you'd be out of the job if you couldn't teach when you were injured.
I think it is
the chapter. I do know how to horribly teach.
So you can I could be injured and never do one single yoga pose now, and I could teach a whole class with no problem.
Right.
And I get it on the floor sometimes with people because I'm trying to keep my body warm if I have to demo something, you know. So I'll do a little bit with each, like I'm doing it with you guys so you can see it. Because you're learning something specific, so that's why I'm doing it with you. But in a regular class, I rarely am doing the poses. I might do a few, you'll see me do a few vinyasas every now and again, so I'm like in my body and staying warm, but I'm not used to doing the poses.
But at first it would make sense.
Yeah, and the teacher training, a lot of times when people pair up, they're like doing the class with them.
And that's how we actually like to try
all of my I do the postures with them. Because it's just one person. It feels weird sometimes to just be like drilling someone like the whole time. They're like, and they feel so like nervous. So do the postures with them. And then get up every now and again and adjust.
I learned by watching and all of them.
Vigilant in certain terms of like, well, I want to get it because everybody else is.
Bikram.
Or
are you talking about Bikram? No, I've not done Bikram. But just the light. Well, yeah, but not that one. I did it at Rasa, where they would have the room and it would be like 90.
Oh,
which was great. That was hot enough
yeah.
for me. But, you know, like being there with my best friend and we're doing it. And I'm like, Kelly can do that. Why can't I? Although Kelly's 5'2".
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
it's
completely different. But, you know, I put myself into these situations.
The length and strength.
Now I have overused injuries.
My problem is I lived 46 years in my joint, and I had no idea I was doing it. Everything was locked out, and
right.
So I don't know if I'm doing it.
Yeah.
So I have
to.
Okay, everybody, finish up.
When you
come over here,
when you bring over, I thought a warrior. Do you have the support of some muscles in? And how do you stay to get up into?
I would say lift your pelvis and your torso. Pelvis and the torso up.
Okay.
Yeah. Some people just say lift your arms, which automatically lifts your pelvis and your torso. Okay. Any questions, you guys? Any bodies? Would it be interesting to look at bodies?
Good.
Or do we feel pretty complete with that?
I like it.
You like looking at the bodies?
Yeah.
Is there anyone that had difficulty with Warrior One?
You mean teaching it or doing it?
Good question. Difficult in their bodies.
I think I need more practice teaching.
Well, yeah. We're gonna constantly have you do little breakout groups so you can practice too. It would be really good for you guys to get into pairs and try, depending on where you live, to practice with each other. Or, the way that I like to practice as well, if you don't have that capability, is to do the poses in your body and talk them out loud as if you were teaching them and record yourself. And then, let your recording teach you. And then you'll see what's missing or what doesn't make sense. And then you'll re-record it and teach yourself again. And then you'll also hear your voice. You guys will want to get used to your voice. Because if you don't like your voice, how are you going to project in a yoga class? You'll be embarrassed. You'll feel like you're rejecting because you're rejecting yourself and your voice. So getting comfortable with your voice is super important. It's part of the yoga practice, right? It's opening your voice, listening to your voice, learning to love it, you know, and to not be afraid. But initially, obviously, I call it the garble mouth. It's like, blah, 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 you know, it feels like there's marbles or something in your mouth. And it's like, why are they there? Because you're just unsure of what you're saying. And that's okay. But the more you say it, just like anything else, you practice, then it comes out. And so you just practice. You keep practicing. And so I like that recording thing because then you can really hear yourself and what your inflections are. Are you talking too fast? Are you talking too slow? My style of yoga when I teach yin is like this, and I talk slowly, and you move your knee out to the side, and you smile when you talk. You know, when I get into Vinyasa, I'm like, dah, 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 dah. I'm like much more hard-nosed because that's just a different style. So you can get used to inflections and things that way too. How do you feel? What's the style of the class? What types of people are in there? My challenge was speaking too fast and tripping over my words and then trying to get them out and then apologizing. Oh, never apologize. Don't apologize. Just don't. You say something or just move on. Because the minute you apologize and I'm like, oh, and they start to like have that like pity energy and it feeds your insecurity. It's even worse. Don't do it. Just say, don't do it. Like if you hit somebody and knock them over, maybe apologize. Yeah. But otherwise, you said something, oh, I meant to say it this way. Or I'm going to change the way I said that. Direct your class. They want someone who knows what they're doing. So the more authoritative you are, even if you don't feel that way, is better. Even if you said the totally wrong thing, you say it with authority. You know, I had an ex-boyfriend who was a medical doctor, and I said, what do you do if someone comes in? And they're like, I have no idea what this thing is. And he says, oh, I just tell them what it is, what I think it might be,
And then I go and I look it up on Google.
Oh my gosh.
But what they learn in med school is to say everything with authority. There's never a question mark on the end. Oh, this is this thing. And then they'll say, hold on a second, I gotta go do something in the back office. Mm-hmm. Then they'll look it up. They have no idea. Oh, what I was gonna say is blah, 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 blah. And it's this, 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 and this. They'll look up the symptoms and, you know, that's what they do. But because they say it authoritatively, we just assume they know it. Mm-hmm. They don't always know what they're talking about. They learn that in medical school, how to be persuasive. Mm-hmm. It's a whole thing that they learn. So you're a yoga teacher, learn how to be persuasive. Don't apologize. Now, if you don't know something and someone asks you, I would just say, you know what? I don't know. That's an interesting question. I'll find out for you the next time you're here. All right, that sounds honest. What?
So for the homework, should I practice what I'm practicing here during class or go home and practice the asanas that I know I'm more likely to be teaching in the beginning?
That's fine.
Or when I know. Okay.
Yeah.
So as long as I'm practicing.
Yeah, just practicing getting the words out. Because a lot of the things that you are probably doing relate to all this stuff at some level, right?
Yeah.
Tadasana. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you know Tadasana. And then what do you do? A lot of forward folding and hip opening or what?
Oh, I don't know. I do everything. I don't do a lot of forward folding.
Okay.
I do back bends, twists.
Oh, okay.
All different kinds of things.
Okay.
But I wouldn't be teaching down dog through and then up into warrior.
Right.
Yeah,
because like
I can't do
it.
That yet. I would teach the pose individually.
Okay.
Down dog, warrior.
Okay.
Like
so
that.
Practice them stepping in. Do you always step in from Tadasana?
Yeah.
Okay. So practice that then.
Or down dog from tabletop, from hands and knees.
From hands and
or,
knees.
Yeah, like
okay.
That. Yeah.
Okay.
Like that.
Yeah.
So
that's great.
Whatever I'm doing, practice that.
Yeah. Practice
down.
That. Yeah. To practice
years.
That, because that's what you want to teach, and that's what's in your body.
Yeah.
And you're going to teach what is in your body based on what you want to teach.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's just a couple of poses, not a whole class.
Right.
Okay.
Well, you know, for now you can start to practice some of these standing poses, unless you don't practice them. Then practice what you practice. You know, if you like these poses and you want to know them a little bit more, then practice them. Practice teaching them. This manual has no cueing. Like I was saying, some manuals have cueing. So it's like, well, how do I learn how to talk about them then? Go to the Yoga Journal website. Yoga Journal has, just like some of my other manuals have, a pose library. And in it, they give you cueing for all the poses. Okay? So if you don't know, look, it'll say foundation. Getting into the pose. In the pose, coming out of the pose. And it'll give you all the instructions. So you can start to read that. So you know how to start practicing cueing.
Is it .com or .org?
Yogajournal.com.
.com.
And then start to look at individual poses and it'll break down all the cueing. And it pretty much maps to, I would say, most trainings. Okay? The language. Do you have a question?
No.
Okay. All right. Any questions right now? I don't want to get too complicated. I know I already gave you external rotation and neutral legs. So just that stuff, we'll get that imprinted in our body as we move. Go to classes, listen. Go to Yoga Journal, read. However you like to learn, okay? And then, you know, you'll hear it over and over again, hopefully, in different ways. So forward bends, we're gonna do some forward bending today. Forward bends, when you teach forward bends as a category, well, let's go over the benefits first because I did for the last one. So let's see, let's go to this page. I keep going to look for page numbers. Okay.
134.
134. Forward bends. This one. We're going to go to the page important. I'm going to teach this stuff.
I'm sorry, what page number?
135.
So it's the forward bends. It says form. I'm just reading some. Because some of these are just little quotes from different people. I'm just reading them. Julie goes. This is an interesting factoid. I like it. You should avoid sitting forward bends if you have a history of lower back pain or injury until you can stretch your legs straight up to 90 degrees or more. That's what I was just saying. I've never heard that before, but that's just saying if you can lift your leg to here, then you start to practice forward bends. Now, I would say that that's untrue only if you use props, because if you use props, then it's different. Because if you use props, you can keep propping your hips open and then you can start to learn how to power
that. Yeah, because how do you get that length if you're not trying for it?
Yeah, but you can, a lot of it's hamstring opening. But if you, let's say a person's really tight in their hips or they have a lot of injury, you could literally prop them this high if you need to. I have clients that have to be up here at certain points in their life. And what does this do? It gives them space to fold over their thighs without having to do a lot of work. This is good for elderly classes. This is good for people with injury management or injury. Most people will probably be on maybe a blanket or two. And most women these days, I don't even see people using props anymore, really, because people have been doing yoga for a lot longer. But yeah, if I have hip injury, you would use a blanket or two. And what are we looking for in forward bends? We're really looking at the pelvis, right? Forward bends is all about the pelvis. That's the thing that's hitting the floor, so to speak. Or the ground that's on the ground. So there's going to be different body types. So we'll go around and look at body types. I'm a hypermobile person. So for me, and I've actually corrected it over time, you can't really see it as much. I used to be like this in my forward bend. So come around the side because you need to see it from the side.
That hurt your low back, didn't it?
I'll tell you what happened, but come around the side so you guys can see it from the side. Because you want to look at the back of the pelvis. So when you're looking at forward bends, you're looking at people's pelvises, okay? So this is a pretty neutral pelvis, right? Now, I used to go like this. Like really arched here. And what would happen is if I was arched here, it's like a double arch, and then my sit bones would go like this, and it would overstretch my hamstrings. Bad for your body. I would get hamstring pulled like that. Okay. So you want a neutral pelvis. Most people that are tight are going to look like this, posterior tilt, rolling back on the sit bones. This and a forward fold is murderous. It doesn't ever go anywhere. First of all, or you're going to hurt your back. So getting people upright into neutral pelvis is important. That's why sitting on a blanket can do that for people most of the time. You just raise them up off the floor. Okay? And we'll look at people's bodies. And what I want to say about that is you want to know the tilt. So in the sagittal plane, forward, we're tilting forward. This is tilting my pelvis anteriorly. A, beginning of the alphabet, forward. Posterior, P, back of the alphabet, back. That's how I remember it. Anterior tilt, posterior tilt. No tilt, neutral. Okay? Then we bring the arms up, and this is just one version of a forward bend. Descending the thighs down, drawing the kneecaps up, or hugging the thigh muscles up, whatever you want to say. Contracting the quadricep muscles. Now what happens, which is really interesting, is when we do that action of active legs, the hip flexors turn on. So what did we say about the hip flexors earlier?
They're chronically tight.
Yeah, they're chronically tight. So this could actually prevent you from forward folding too. So here's the subtle action that you would do. Is even though you're drawing the quads up or you're activating your legs or you're lifting your kneecaps, however you like to say it, you still want to feel a slight internal rotation to really confuse you, which will soften the hip flexors. It will give you more space to tilt your pelvis and to really forward. Does that make sense? I know I'm using a lot of anatomy terms, but so when you do that, what it does, the internal rotation, is it opens your sacrum wider. And I'm going to show you this in a forward fold, because a standing forward fold is the same as a forward bend. If I'm here and I'm trying to internally rotate, or I'm sorry, if I'm externally rotating, if I'm externally rotating my legs and trying to fold, that's going to feel like crap. Because this is, it's doing this. Right? When I'm in neutral legs in Tadasana, with this slight internal rotation in my upper thighs, it widens my sacrum. Just watch this little tiny action. Watch this in my body, because you can see it easily. You see what just happened? Do you see it?
Mm-hmm. Pelvis tilts.
Yeah.
And now that's going to give me more room to go over my thigh bones. The more inner upper thighs, really the inner upper thigh goes back, the more room I have to tilt over my thighs. Okay? And then this widens. And then once you're in it, like anything for men, just to keep stable. Stability is here. Glute knees, outer hips. And then I bring them in to come up. Same thing with a forward bend. Inner thighs rolling down slightly, tilting forward anteriorly, still dropping the inner thighs, still rotating forward. This is like a little wheel. Just think of like a crank. It's going, it's going. Some of you are going to feel this edge where you go, up, that's enough for me. Mine's somewhere around here. Okay? So that's enough for me, for my back. So it's still, you see how it's long? It's lengthening? It's not rounding. It's lifting. Okay. Right? So this is kind of where I stop, because that's where I know it feels good on my body and it's safe for my hamstrings. And then I can round at my thoracic. Now I'm just extending the length of my thoracic spine to come a little bit further, because that feels like a nice stretch in my body. Okay? So you don't have to, do this whole nose-to-knee thing. This is actually healthier as a forward fold. I'll just say that. Okay? And then you come out of it, bellies engaged. Now after forward fold, most people are going to go, oh, God, that's kind of intense on my back. So that's why a lot of times if I do forward folds, after forward folds, I'll either do something like a twist to disengage that intensity, or I'll come down on the floor and I'll do something. What is this? Oh. I'll do like core work or something, or even like a spinal twist, something like that, to like release the sacrum or release that. Okay? Forward bends are, what do you think is the benefit of forward bends? What would be a benefit of this?
Relaxes the nervous system.
To pass a fitness test?
to release all attachments.
Physically,
what's it? Release the hamstrings.
Yeah, it's a stretch for the back of the body. Yeah. And it's good for digestion. Mm. Also great for cramps, women. Mm. This is really good if you have your period, if you have cramps. It feels really good. And the other thing that you can do is you can do something like this if you get cramps. You can just roll a towel or a blanket there, and you let that move your spine. If your belly to your spine, it actually releases tension from cramping. It feels really good. And this actually releases your scoliosis too. Okay, so there's benefits to forward folds. Digestion is one of them. And it brings your body into the parasympathetic nervous system.
Can you
your head's down.
Can you explain to me how it releases the psoas muscle?
If you get the blanket like right up in here where the sun comes up.
Okay, so it's just
up,
a fine pressure.
Yeah, yeah, just
okay.
A fine pressure.
Okay.
It's like a nice release for this.
Okay.
That's nice. Have you ever seen that? Like it, you can do things like, what do they do? I think they do this. Mm-hmm. Where you can roll onto the set. You can do it from here too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what the foam roller.
I have to pee. Yeah, you can do it with a foam roller. So let me just pee real quick because apparently I have to. I did that. And let's everybody get to your seat. You can get to your mat. Grab a blanket and fold it in half. And we'll just have everybody use a blanket just to see where everyone's at. And then I'm going to walk around and look at your pelvises, and then we'll point people out and we'll look at each body.
You already know that you're really tight in your hamstrings or the legs or back, just as like bend in the knee. Okay. I'm just going to look at pelvises and we'll see if everybody's pretty upright.
Am I supposed to bend forward? Yeah.
I was like, who's that?
No, just upright. Upright, what you think is upright. And we'll see if you're right. Your spine's upright.
Cute! Bless you!
Thank you.
Okay. Good. Just go upright, Christine, so you're more natural. Yeah. Good. Okay. So, let's all come over and see this lovely beauty. So for her, you know, she's bendy, so you might be like, oh, she's got it. Mm-hmm. But we would actually lift her up. So let's get you a little, one more blanket.
So posterior is the opposite of tucking? Or is it?
No,
posterior.
It's the same thing. It's a posterior is your pelvis going this way.
She's in
a posterior.
Oh, that way.
And okay. Anterior is forward.
Anterior,
posterior,
is
neutral.
In my posterior.
It could be hamstrings, it could be, yeah.
For me, a lot of times it's because I have so much butt tissue.
She has that much butt tissue.
She does, and lift it up.
Yeah, okay, we're going to do this.
These
positions really felt really lateral.
Yeah, we just need a little extra height. So let's see if this works. This might be too much height. Let me try to move it. So that's starting to get better, right?
Mm-hmm.
See how it just kind of flattened a little bit?
Uh-huh.
I'm going to go So this is like path of least resistance. That looks much better. See that?
Uh-huh.
That feels better. Does that feel better in your body?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right?
And it's working more of like the spot that's weak.
Yeah, right. So you have to work
a little bit.
Okay. And then, and the thing is, this her she has her, so her thoracic spine actually is slightly flattened.
Uh-huh.
And that could be a structural thing. I don't know. I haven't looked at an x-ray of her spine. But a lot of people's spines will go in here, they'll round here, and it'll go in here. Now, I don't know, we have to stand you up to see if that changes. But hers goes in a little bit. And so, who knows, right? It could be a couple of things that are happening. But that did affect her lower back. Now this looks a little bit healthier. I'm kind of looking here, right? This is kind of going in again in her natural curve. Okay? So when you go to fold, feel like you're lifting the front of your pelvis up, and then as you exhale, hinge at your hips and pause. How does that feel?
Tight.
So she doesn't need to go anymore.
Where is it tight for you?
I mean, in the, like, here.
Yeah, it's around the center. Her thoracic is flattened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What if she just releases her thoracic?
Try to round right here and see what happens.
It just doesn't, this is what I end up doing. It relaxes a lot, and I just don't feel like I'm doing the right thing.
Yeah. So,
like, this does feel like it's work, like holding this area and working that.
Yeah. Lift up here, and then tilt from your pelvis, and pause. And now, think of lengthening from your middle back forward and round here. Just round it, see what would happen. And lengthen. It's hard for her to do that. There we go. Okay? So what you're looking for is here, being long, lifted, not rounded, but it's lifted. It's kind of flat, okay? And then the natural curve of the thoracic. For her, she's working to do this. Okay? And then her toes would be reaching forward, pointing up. So she doesn't have to go far. Like I said, this is her pose. All right, come on up. And then do whatever you need to do for your back to, you know, twist, or you can come into Happy Baby if you want. But that's good for you, yeah.
And there are times when this is purely structural.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
I do have an injury here.
Yeah.
I was pulling the wrong way, a very heavy cart, and it like popped.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Showing your back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I've had the same problem with my back being too straight. People were always like, oh, you have such a nice back, it's so straight. And, you know, I was starting to have problems. And it's getting better. Working it.
Yeah,
it's shaping my spine. It's changing.
You bring your body back into its natural curve. So I've done it.
And
my
posture. Just changing my posture through just slightly adjusting through time, working different things, and it's there's more curve to go in.
Yeah, because she had the injury.
Body can change somewhat, you know.
When you have an injury like that, then it hurts, so then we compensate, right? Into a different area, so she compensated down here. That's the way that translated in her body. Pretty cool, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. who's the other body?
Yeah, I'll be the other body.
You want to be another body?
Mm-hmm. I tend to like the lower, or on the ground, or not higher than this. That just feels good to me.
Okay. All right. So let's come to the side so we can see your side and see what's happening with her.
I feel like she's pretty straight, but no. I feel like her shoulders are forward.
Yeah. So you could widen her collarbones and her shoulder heads back. It feels a little compressed to me energetically. Like she could probably add another level. Just one. Not a lot. Try just fold that like in half.
Right.
feels a little strange. And then roll your weight towards the middle of your sit bones. And then lift from your belly and lift the sides of your waist. There you go. See, now just a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. And now it's a better curve. So it was subtle. All these things are subtle sometimes. Some of them are gross physical movements.
Is there a natural curve?
Uh-huh.
You see it?
Yeah.
Because I know I am tight up here too.
Uh-huh.
Really?
Yeah. That's fine, huh? That's good. Okay. So how far do you forward fall? Like there?
Well, no, I usually fall further.
Okay. Does that feel good?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Great. That is fine with me. Good. Who else? I think let's look at your body, Michelle, just because you have an injury, and we'll see what that looks like.
And again, don't go far.
She's going to go less far. We'll see if we need to pick her up a little bit. So can you bring your body forward on the blanket?
There you go.
I want her whole sit bone and her whole pelvis supported. That actually looks good. Yeah, I think it looks pretty good, actually.
Okay, yeah.
Well,
so this
would be inner thighs roll down.
Okay, that's what I was trying to do earlier. So when I do
that, it's not this, right?
Okay.
I just want you guys to know. Your inner thigh rolling down doesn't mean this. It's a subtle upper inner thigh rotation down. Just really subtle.
Okay.
Just to release your hip flexors.
And this is where I start to feel tightness.
Good. So
right
stop
here.
There. And that's her pose. I just wanted you to see it, because that might be it. That's where she starts to feel her sciatic and her nerve and her pain.
What
so
about
hamstring?
It's tight for sure. There, but this is what limits me. So
mm-hmm.
a lot of times I can just sit here and breathe, and then I might be able to go a little bit further.
Yeah.
But this I could stretch it, and then
you can raise yourself a level.
Okay.
Put another blanket there, or a bolster.
Or
sit on the bolster. And let's just see. Sometimes it's experimental because you're not in the body, right? So you have to kind of. Like if I were with a private, this is what I would do with private. I would just sit there and I'd do all sorts of things. Probably feels a little bit better, right?
Yeah.
So just being higher is going to help her. Less strain. There you go. You can pause where you feel good.
I feel more on my hamstrings as a limitation as opposed to my back.
Yeah. So stick with the bolster. Reach through your inner legs. There you go. Flex your ankles.
Yeah.
So she can do that.
So it's all around your lower back.
You don't want to feel it. You don't want her to feel it in her sacrum, in her sciatic.
Now you can stretch.
Now she can stretch her hamstrings. So that's how you do. You just experiment. You're like, let's try another little look. If she's having pain and it's in the back of her pelvis, this pose is to stretch your hamstrings. It's not to have back pain, right? So we raise her up a level, like we did. Okay, so now everyone's feeling a little bit better. So that's what we do. That is that simple. Forward folds. I use a lot of straps with forward folding to show people that action. I'll just use this just to be safe. So they can get modifications of bending your knees. Like some people like literally when I have back pain, I have to do this, to just like do that. You can use a strap. You can have people work their feet, like start to stretch their feet and see the relationship of their pelvis with their legs. So that's one way to start to engage the legs without really doing anything with the pelvis.
And calf tightness.
And the calf tightness, yes. Achilles, tendons, all that stuff. Right. Put the strap near the ball mount of the feet like they are, because you want to be able to eventually almost stretch your heels more forward. Toes, that's going to get the hamstrings the most. And then if people are forward folding with a strap, elbows out so that you can keep that openness in the chest. So you don't have to be like, it's like, keep it open, just work subtly that way. It's a lot more space, it's a lot more openness in the chest, okay? So that's the benefit of straps. Chandra Shavasana, same thing. You could be on that blanket. There's a slight rotation, as I was saying earlier, in the torso. in Janu Shavasana because this leg is open, and you know, you can come here, you can come here. It doesn't always have to look like this. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you've got Janu Shavasana, Paschimottanasana. Then we go into some twisting. And this is actually a neutral pelvis. When you're twisting, your pelvis is neutral. And what's really important about twists and pelvis is that the pelvis always stays neutral. It's just the upper body that it's twisting. And that's important because what you'll see a lot is the hip that of the way, the direction you're rotating, will tend to move back and people will twist their pelvises, which is really not good for their SI joint either. So you come to a twist, let's say one hand is behind you, you go to twist, you're turning the torso, maintaining the anchoring of the sit bones, and then you're twisting the upper body only because you want to maintain that lift in the lower spine still, okay? But by and large, you walk around the room and you'll see people are twisting their whole pelvis to turn. It's really not good for the spine. That's how people pop discs and get hernia discs. So you'll feel it in the upper middle back. The shoulder blades is where you'll feel the twist. That's where you want to feel the twist, in your upper middle thoracic, the back. Okay? You can try that out. You guys want to do that? Go back to your mat. Sit bones heavy. The extended leg thigh is really rooted, like you're firming up the quad. Left hand, fingertips behind the sacral area. Let's take the right arm up. And as you exhale, turn towards that left leg, elbow outside the leg, or wrap your arm around the leg. This is Marichasana A. And then, arms are C. And then you're twisting front, you're bringing the sacrum in. Sacrum's in, you're not sinking. Sacrum in, twisting from the rib cage, shoulder blades in towards the chest. And then you're widening your chest, gazing towards the back shoulder. Do you guys feel that, the upper back versus the lower back?
Yeah.
Right?
Is this helpful for what I have going on with the flat back?
Yeah. That'll help you to open up your thoracic. Do you feel it in the middle back?
Yeah.
Did you pop a rib? Is that what happened?
I don't know. I went to physical therapy for it, but not until a couple years after. And then
See, so she didn't tell us she had an injury until, you know, kind of read it out. We could kind of see it. That's the anchoring. Sit bones and pelvis stay neutral, and then when you forward bend, it goes anteriorly. What else do I want to teach you about that? Let's look at the page. So after forward bends, this picture, the next page it talks about spinal flexion and hip flexion, just so you guys can understand this. In most forward bends, the spine is safest when employing hip flexion, not spinal flexion. That's what we just talked about. So you're moving from your hips. Your spine is going for the ride. Does that make sense? Your hips are moving, the spine is going with it. Spinal flexion is this. Rounding. And extending. But we're not doing that. We're in Tadasana torso. In a forward bend. That's what they're saying here. It's just mixing terms. In forward bends, the spine is safest when employing hip flexion. Your hip flexors are moving you, not your spine flexing. That is, the bend is intended to occur at the hip crease, not the back. However, many forward bending poses may benefit from an entry that uses hip flexion to orient the torso relative to the legs, followed by, and they're talking about that little rounding in the thoracic, spinal flexion. But does that make sense? And if it doesn't, ask, and I'll try to put it in other words. Tadasana torso in a forward bend. We are not bending our spine. Until the very end of the pose, you might round them a little bit. At the very end, like you've done all that good work to keep that straight, long spine, and at the very end, you might just take your chin in, but you haven't rounded your spine to get there.
Yeah.
It is important to note that spinal flexion is not advised for all spines. Baxter Bell of the Yoga Ayurveda for healthy aging recommends that spinal flexion, bringing the torso forward, bringing the torso toward the legs and rounding, should be avoided for the current conditions or avoided for the conditions below. Osteoporosis of the thoracic ribcage area. Herniated discs anywhere along the spine, most commonly the cervical spine. Low back pain that is worsened by forward bending. Acute strain of the lower back if you notice pain when you forward bend. The history of degenerative discs in the spaces between the spinal bones. Spinal stenosis, second and third trimester of pregnancy, and hamstring tendonitis or hamstring tears and muscle pains. They seem slightly obvious to me, but if they're not, ask me. Pelvic tilt. The position of the pelvis governs the relationship to the spine and the legs and is a key element of proper alignment. When the pelvis is forward, you're in the anterior tilt. When it tilts back, it's in posterior tilt. Using the image of the pelvis as a bowl of water in anterior tilt, the pubic bone is moving toward the earth. It's tilting forward, and you're spilling out your guts. When it goes the other way, it's lifting up, then you can spill your water out the back. And so now we're just saying, keep the water in the bowl, people. Pelvis means bowl.
So anterior spill, posterior spill.
Yeah, we're just giving you like a nice graphic image in case that works better for you. The anterior tilt of the pelvis is critical to safe forward bending. Often yoga students will fold from their lower backs, which we just talked about. We don't want to do that. It puts pressure on the spine. While there is a number of alignment cues that aim to keep the spine safe, it is important to remember that yoga asana doesn't deal in absolutes. Always and never, when referring to an approach or position in a particular pose, may not be appropriate for every single practitioner. That's the little legalese, you know, at the bottom of your waiver. Mm-hmm. Right? And the reality is that it depends. And that's why, you know, you might need to experiment a little bit. It's okay to experiment. It doesn't mean that you don't know what you're doing. So, like, if you're like, oh, let's do that. Let's add a holster. Let's do that. It's because you're inquiring about how the body's going to respond, not because you don't know what you're doing. But I just want you to hear that because some yoga teachers are like, well, I should know the answer. Like, why? Why would you know the answer? Everybody's body's completely different. You're going to see things that you think might work, but if it's not working for them, then it's not working for them. Try something different. That's how you get to learn about postures and body and energy and all those things. Like, we didn't know about energy. So we try a couple things and then we're like, this is interesting. Her thoracic spine is flat. What could we do? Well, maybe if I raise her up, it'll help her lower back because that's closest to the ground, foundation up, and that affected. And then she did a little bit of spinal flexion at the end and that felt good to extend her spine that way. So it's like, oh, good, got it. Right? So we just experiment. So that. Balanced effort and ease, one of the few yoga sutras that refers to the physical posture, I talked about this yesterday, Stira Sukham Asana, meaning every asana should be a balance of effort and ease. Stira is effort and Sukha is ease or sweetness or pleasure. So every pose should feel like a little bit of effort and a little bit of ease all mixed in together. So yoga is so fun because it's always, you're always balancing, right? In forward bends, the effort is in lengthening your limbs and your spine, and then the ease can be achieved through softening and relaxing. An instructional tool can be to guide students in terms of their maximum effort. For example, find 50% of your maximum forward bend and breathe there. That's interesting. I've heard that instruction before. Like, don't go to your max. What would it feel like to be halfway at your max? Because that's a place that feels more easeful. Instead of like pulling on my body, which is what a lot of people do in the Vinyasa classes particularly. I want to get to the next pose. I want to get my hand to my chin or whatever, my chin to my knee. Like there's this very goal-oriented aspect to that. And how is that really helping? Muscle awareness, teaching anatomical techniques. Let's see, static facilitated dynamic. We talked about dynamic earlier when I was doing Warrior Two, and I was like, this is dynamic, where we're moving. Mm-hmm. Have you ever been in a class where they do a lot of movement with dynamic? It's actually quite nice. It's very flowy and dancey, and that feels good on people's bodies, especially beginners, because the way I've been working you guys, a beginner cannot stand here. Well, you know, you guys are all picking people apart and telling them, but you're like, oh, you know, like totally convulsing at this point. So these things are better for them. To come into a pose and out. Into a pose and out. Into a pose, they get breaks, and then they come out, and then they do the other side. And that feels really good. And it's nice to pepper that in. A static pose is when you hold it. Static. It's static. And now I'm just working subtle, subtle action. A lot of them you won't see. A gross physical movement is like a big movement. This is a gross physical movement. A subtle movement is like I'm here, and the average Joe would just see me here. But if I'm rotating my inner thigh towards the ceiling and firming my outer hip and pressing down through my outer ankle and knee or my heel, those are subtle things that most people wouldn't see, but you can see them, and people can feel them in their body. Right? Those are subtle actions. Gross physical movement, better for beginners. Subtle stuff, much better like later on, more intermediate. It's just okay. In the beginning, they're just figuring out where's my foot go, where's the weight, or what am I moving. So, stay with big body parts and bigger instructions in the beginning is easier for them. Okay, so forward bending is either a seated forward fold or a standing forward fold. Right? So a standing forward fold would be like Uttanasana. Same exact things apply. Same things apply. The only difference is you're standing. Really. Yeah.
So how I started getting back into being able to do yoga again was to do the pose moving,
and then
hold at the end. Is that something that is being done in yoga classes and that students will accept? That works really well.
Yeah, it's nice. Some people don't like to sit in a pose for too long. It's hard. It's really challenging, and some people get bored. So to like pepper in some dynamic movement would be nice. It's like a nice break.
Yeah, I love
it. And it is good for beginners and coming back into your practice.
It's a kind of flow.
It is a flow. It's a flow. Inhale, exhale. Inhale, exhale. Inhale, exhale. Yeah. Yeah, it's a great flow. We have not been cueing with breath yet because you're just getting the words out. But eventually, when you cue, inhales are usually lengthening or arms above or lifting up. Exhales are usually forward folding or releasing or contracting. It's slightly different in different things. Core work, it would be different than, like, let's say, forward folding. So in core work, there's people cue them differently. I've heard both ways. But I like to cue core work where I'm exhaling to contract my navel down to the mat. Inhaling to lift up. And then I release. And then exhale. I pull the navel down. Inhale, lift up. That's how I cue. I also, with like things like this, like leg lifts, I'll usually exhale to pull the navel down. Inhale. So this is lengthening. Inhale. Exhale to bring it back to me because there's effort there. This is an exhale. Inhale. Exhale. Inhale, exhale. Now when you're here, inhale. Up, upward moving, lengthening, right? Exhale, forward. Inhale, lengthening. Exhale, because now I'm going to go into an arm balance. I need that for my back. Inhale, it's back bend. There's lots of back bend around. Inhale. Exhale, belly draws back. And I'm going to fold again. Downward dog is a forward fold, and it's an inversion. So that's where the breath comes from. If I'm in a pose and I'm holding statically, I could do something with the arms, okay? Exhale. Or I could say, inhale, lift your spine. Exhale, front of the hip. One's lengthening, one's contracting. So you can start to cue however you'd like. Some teachers really like to cue the inhale and exhale in every single instruction. Keep some in the breath. Inhale, open your arms. Exhale, side bend. Inhale, back to arms by the ears. Exhale, from your hip, lengthen your back leg. Inhale, lift your torso.
You know, a lot of times when teachers are going at that rate or going one after another, and they're not doing it themselves, they tend to not give you long enough to breathe in and breathe out. I mean, it's like you don't even have your breath out, and they're telling you to take another breath. You know, mm-hmm. That's what I have found.
Yeah, it's just breathing with your students, you know. Because if you're not breathing, they're not breathing.
But sometimes you can be too fast and they're hyperventilating.
Right. And then you're like always trying to catch up to your own breath. Yeah, you want to breathe with them. Or if you're going to give a lot of instruction, because sometimes I'll give a lot of instruction and then I'll have them sit in it and then like integrate. And then during that time, I'm breathing. I'm like, all right, maybe I was going too fast. Slow down. Bend my feet. Give them a break. Maybe it's too much alignment. You have to listen to the subtle cues of what's going on, too.
People breathe at such different paces.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. On the next exhalation, on your next exhalation, mm-hmm. take this yeah. move on your and next then keep breathing instruction on your next inhale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Four types of forward bends. The main quality that all forward bends share is that they create a stretch in the posterior or the back of the body. We do have priorities when it comes to stretching the structures of the back. The lower back is always the most important. This is the area that takes on the majority of the load, as it is the most important in terms of supporting the spine and creating a healthy relationship between the spine and the pelvis. In addition to stretching the lower back, you might choose to emphasize the upper back, hamstrings, or calves. Let's take a look at the different types of forward bends. Group one, knees bent, thighs near the chest, apanasana. So that's up, this is up. That's a forward bend, right? Group two, legs extended, either symmetrical or they'll give you asymmetrical. So symmetrical, paschimottanasana. Okay, group three, one leg extended, asymmetrical, seated tree. And the fourth kind of bend, chest away from the thighs, dandasana, hands up the toes. This is dandasana, hands up the hips. Okay? Dandasana, staff pose. So this is what you guys were doing when you came to your seat, so that you can look at the pelvis. So we start dandasana. Sometimes people will do janushirasana. Then they might do paschimottanasana. Paschimottanasana is the hardest one, I think, for most people. When you split your legs, it's a little bit easier sometimes for space. So that's kind of like the order. So check out the pelvis, dandasana. Then do maybe an asymmetrical, these are a little easier, there's more space. And then the hardest group is more like this. The easiest group is this. That feels really good, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So what she's talking about, and this is a good one to remember, this is for forward fold and standing, because a lot of people do this, especially if they're really open. Because we're talking about forward bends at the hip joint, right? Anterior and posterior and neutral, right? We're bending in this pose at the hip joint. We're reaching forward with that long spine, long spine, long spine, long spine. Now what happens for a lot of people around here is they, if they're really open, they'll start to separate their sit bones even more and they'll do a slight arch. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
In my lower back. That's quite common to have happen. So to avoid that, well, you can bring your sit bones, I say bring your sit bones towards your heel, or I'll come over to someone and say, lift the pit of your abdomen or lift the front of your pelvis if I see them doing that. And then as they get down here, the way that you see it, if they're doing that, I don't want to do it necessarily because it can actually pop your hamstring. But they really dump it, like the sensation junkies, I call them. So it's like this goes, the sit bones separate, and it pulls on the hamstring. So either for those people, you have to go over to them, because if you tell the whole room to do what I'm going to tell you, it's going to put people in posterior tilt. But sit bones towards the heels, or firm the sit bones in towards each other, or... And this it could say to anybody, firm your outer hips in, and it will actually help that too. And then what I would do is I would come around to that person, and I would actually, well, an intimate adjustment, which would be actually manipulate the pelvis, but I would just hold their outer hips. So for you, I would go around, and I would go like this. And I would take her outer hips, and I would just press the femur bone in. You feel that?
Yeah, and if I go with it and kind of contract in here, I feel these drawing.
Yeah, they draw in. And really, like my teacher used to just do this. She would just like literally take your sit bones together. But you can do it by manually firming your outer hips in. That's for someone who's hyperextending and arching in their lumbar as they come down. It's the same as a forward bend. If I were to do that in a forward bend, sitting, you would do the same things. The hamstrings would also do that.
Is that an external rotation once again, or
it's a little bit joint? It's a little bit like overly rotating it's like overly doing the internal rotation.
Oh, okay. Oh yeah.
It's like
really
reaching
the tailbone up
right
when you want to bug it in.
Really it's from the pelvis. It's what's happening with the pelvis. The pelvis is actually arching. And so that is quite common. You'll see that a lot in LA.
Yeah.
A lot of gymnast bodies, a lot of gymnasts would do that. And it's like sensation. They want sensation. They're already so open in their hamstrings.
Right. You're still trying to achieve
it.
Something.
Yeah, trying to achieve something. But yeah, I tore my, I didn't tear it all the way, but I impinged it or like stretched it too far. And I'm like, a year. It's terrible. I was always the one that was called out in the teacher training. Oh, look at what she's doing. I was like the sensation person. Okay, so that was a really good one to show. I think that's actually what they're showing actually here. Let's see. No, maybe not. Sometimes in 9-year-olds they'll have that in here. So the physical effects of a forward fold, like the one we were just doing at Thomas was doing, it's over the back body, release the spine. Again, abdominal organs being massaged. If I have digestion issues, I do forward folds to like work it out. Energetic effects calms the body, quiets the mind, restores the nervous system, turns your senses inward, that's pratyahara. Drawing the focus to the present moment. Yeah. Forward bends are often sequenced at the end of class to cool you down. And hip openers prepare you for forward bends. We're talking about hip openers like Sukhasana, things like this in the beginning of class. Right, that's the proper Sukhasana where you cross at the mid-shins. That side is weird for me always, but this, right, that prepares you for a forward bend. It's opening the hips. What else are we teaching intensive forward bending practice counter with gentle back bends. Right, so that's why I did that when I came down. You know, if you're coming, if you've done a lot of forward bending, this feels really good, right? To just have your back on the floor. Mm-hmm. So you could either do like some bridges, that would help, right? Bridges would help. Little back bends, soft back bends, twists, also super helpful to release the spine in that way as well. Oh, yeah. Okay. Happy baby, another great transition pose for forward folds. It gives you space for your sacrum and allows you to bring your tailbone down. Yeah, you guys know this. It's like if I do a bunch of forward folds, my back kills me after a while. I'm like, I have to counter it with some other things. Okay? All right. Oh, and look. This counter pose next. Ah, I'm just in tune, man. As mentioned above, restorative back bends and poses that activate the hamstrings, right? So, right, when we're in a forward bend, we're stretching our hamstrings, right? Are we stretching our hamstrings in forward folds?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So to counter it, counter the stretching of hamstrings and create balance, we want to contract our hamstrings. What poses contract the hamstrings?
Backward bends.
Back bends, yeah, like any back bend, but specifically like the one that they were talking about here, Setu Bandha, bridge pose. Mm-hmm. Bridge pose, your hamstrings are activated. Mm-hmm. Camel pose, hamstrings are activated.
Fish
pose. Fish pose. Wait, is fish pose?
Where you're extending the hips, but is that fish pose?
No. Fish pose
is a fish.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of this one.
What's the locust pose. Yeah? Any back bend like that is contracting the hamstrings, right?
Is bridge pose so common because it's so accessible to most people?
Yeah, bridge pose is really easy for most. So yeah, when we're contracting our hamstrings, then we're doing the opposite. So here it has, let's see, Urdhva Dhanurasana, Ustrasana, which is full wheel, camel pose. That's what it's saying here. And then the universal neutralizer. Twists, that's what they're saying, not twists. Okay? So we did Paschimottanasana, Janushasana. Upavishta Konasana is the wide-legged Supta Panigastha. This is a great pose. I teach this pose all the time. I teach it in Yin. I teach it in my Vinyasa classes. This is like one of those poses that is like just an awesome way to open up your hamstrings. And use a strap because, you know, why not? The leg is usually a lot longer than most people's arms. So you have the strap there and you can use that. I like to put my thumb in the hip crease to angle down the right outer hip to keep the thigh pressing forward because you want that 90 degree leg as best as you can, of course. And then walk the hands up, descend the shoulders down, reach to the heel. The other leg is active too, right? It's a really good stretch for your hamstring. And for a lot of people, when they lift a leg, they shorten that leg sideways. Like they lift. So you're gonna work them to have the sit bone down. And so that's a good one. And then you can open this one out, keep the left thigh bone on the ground. Okay, this one can turn even into a twist, which can be a nice pose. If you keep the front leg with the toes pointing up, this is actually a yin pose where you're just getting the outer IT band, which is like, feels really good. And then the bottom leg rolls out, you can make it into a twist. So this is a good pose. You can imprint a lot of things with this pose. Okay. So that's Supta Panigastasana, ABC. Kamakasa, why did they put that there? Oh, because sometimes people forward fold with it, right? Okay. But so Gomukhasana is stacking the knees. Most people teach it upright, but it can be a forward fold. So this would be Gomukhasana, but then sometimes you'll fold forward, and that's an outer hip stretch. I like using that with the block.
Support. It's more restorative that way.
Okay, so those are forward folds. I don't know that you need to really know any more than this at that point. We are going to do, like I said, back bend, another class. It's like sometime in May. Let me just go through this real quick, and I'll do twists with that. I'll talk about the sacrum twist. Just letting you see how far this goes. Twisting seated, I'll do that that day. Balancing. Balancing, we could talk a little bit about today because we have time. But not all the balancing codes, not arm balancing, just balancing, standing balancing. So go through back bends and go through twists, and you'll get to this page. I'm sorry, I don't have this page number, but balancing category.
Balancing.
Balancing. Okay. While some poses may fit into more than one category, the purpose of this section is to provide a summary of balancing asanas. Form. Types of balanced postures. Standing asanas, which is balancing on one leg, such as tree pose or rickshasana, and Garudasana, eagle pose. So eagle pose, I think there should be like eagle pose earlier. It's like when you cross one leg over, you can double back and twist. After twists, then balancing, and there's a woman in the Virabhadrasana 3. So in standing balances, you're focusing on one leg, you're focusing on one foot, right? You should balance. So when I come into a tree pose, I'm going to teach the ground up. I'm going to teach the leg that's on the ground first, and then I'll teach the action of this leg, and then I'll go back to this leg, and then I'll worry about the pelvis and the arms and the torso. But I'm going to teach this, and then this, and then this again, just to kind of stabilize and firm in, centralize, and then rest. If I'm in Garudasana, same thing. I'm going to focus on the foot, the weight's in the heel. Remember, any bent knee positions, weight's in the heel. Let me get this first. Okay? So you can have a kickstand if you want. You can do the full pose. Watch my hips, they twist. You gotta get back to neutral. Okay, it's right here. And then for some of these, they consider a forward fold. So you're folding over your hips. Great. Firm it again. And then breathe. You're rounding in your upper chest action in this version. This is inner thigh rotation. Going inner thighs or rolling in. This is like one of those poses that gets the outer hips. It's a good pose to prepare for back bends, actually, because you're getting a lot of outer hips opening.
And the arms, would you say they're kind of stretching the trapezius? So yeah. That helps those who overact.
Yeah, it's one of those really good poses to prep for back bends. And inversions.
Yeah.
Like dolphin and stuff like that. It's a good pose to prep for that.
What was that one called?
Dolphin. Which one?
What did you just do? Garudasana,
eagle pose.
Eagle pose doesn't matter which arm.
Yeah, I know. Everyone always asks that. So the way I teach it, so I can remember it, is if let's say the left leg's going forward, then the left arm is coming under. I just keep it with lefts or with rights. Now, if you're teaching it instead of going under but over, the left leg goes over, right arm goes over, left and right. That's why I always teach it under. So, left leg goes over, left arm goes under.
Yeah.
All right. It's the opposite. That's why it's hard to remember. So if you stay. not going to do too much, but it would knock you off center.
Oh,
it
feels down
a lot weirder.
Yeah.
It turns your torso a little bit because the weight's distributed differently.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about this one because this is a fun one. So just so you know, these aren't things that some of you may ever teach, but you can do things like this in a class where you're in like a half. This could be for beginners, okay? Let's say you decide to do something with the legs and just a half forward fold or bend, right? You could have them lift one leg and come into a pose like this, which would be a prep pose for something like a Vira 3. But this, just doing this, and maybe I'll have you guys do this, is hip, that firming in that I was talking about. If you do this a lot, you are going to feel there's hip stabilizers like crazy. So just doing this. Sometimes I do this if I'm going to do like handstands or if you're Vrajasana 3. And I'll just keep doing this until I'm like, okay, is that left hip burning like crazy? And they're like, oh my God, my left hip is burning like crazy. And then I'm like, great. Now you can feel your outer hips firming in. So you do it on both sides. So the leg that's lifting isn't where you're going to feel it. It's the stabilizing leg, right? It's my right hip that's firming in. This helps you with balance. Just this little action. So if you want to try it, you'll feel those glute needs, those outer hips, for sure. This is like, I had to do some physical therapy to get my outer hips to strengthen with all my SI joint dysfunction stuff. Okay, so if you do it a while, you'll feel it. Make sure your ankles are under your hips. But this is going to prep you for any of those balance poses like Ardha Chandrasana twists, etc. You guys feel that? Mm-hmm. It's a big mm-hmm. movement, right? And that can help you with poses like handstand, headstand, anything that needs firming in.
You said to keep the hips square.
Hips square, yeah. You could bring your ankles forward even more. Yeah, there you go. You guys feel that?
Mm-hmm.
Really works you, doesn't it? And then, what I'll say too, is try to avoid opening your leg externally. What would that look like? This. Mm-hmm. I want neutral leg. If you have tight glutes, tight butt muscles, if you're a biker or a runner, naturally your leg is gonna wanna externally rotate. Because your glutes are used to working really hard. Biking and running, right? So when we talk about standing splits, a lot of dancers will go into a standing split and they'll do this. They'll open up their leg, right? Because that's what they're used to. They do a lot of external openings in dance. But now if you turn your toes down into neutral pelvis, I bet the leg doesn't go up as high. So why is that important? Because if you're going to do a handstand, you don't want to open your hips. You want your hips to be square so that when you lift up, you're in neutral pelvis. Okay? I teach a lot of stuff against the wall. I haven't done a nice deep wall class in a while. But all this stuff can happen at the wall. If you're with beginners, puppy dog is a good prep for down dog. Have you ever seen puppy dog? So your feet are at distance, you bring your hands to the wall at hip height, and then you walk back, long spine, press the palms, straighten the arms. This is down dog for elderly classes, people with injury. This is fine. This can be your down dog. It's a non-inversion, so if you have like glaucoma or if you had a history of stroke, you don't want to be an inversion. It's too much pressure on your head. So this is fine, down dog. We can talk about prep poses at some point. We will when we sequence for sure. So what I was showing you earlier about the legs, you could do a class where your legs are up against the wall. Let me think about this for a second, whatever. So again, fingertips align with your hip points, pressing back. You're in that like puppy dog formation, feet hip distance. You could have people just lift a leg. This would be like a warrior three. So you don't have to be in a 2-3 level vinyasa to do this. You could be in a beginner class and work this, and just work that action. And that would be a lot of work for people's hips. Okay? Any of these poses, any of the standing poses could be done against the wall. Parsvottanasana to like really drill the action of the legs. Here's my heel against the wall. I'm doing this pose. I'm going to really feel the back of that leg. And that's a good way when you come into, let's say, a twist, to keep the back leg active, you know, because I have a wall to show me where I'm going and what I'm doing. Just like when we talked about triangle pose, all these poses could be peak poses in the beginner class, just working mindfully into them and having that stability of the wall. So that's a way that you could teach these poses, even in gentle yoga. That's like a big pose for them. Sometimes I'll do this as a forward bend. If you go against the wall, put your feet against the wall, dandasana here. Fingertips towards the wall. And then if you have that length, like this is how far your legs are, you know that your legs are this far away from the wall. If you're standing, I can put my leg up against the wall, and I can teach this pose, Uttita Asana and Tadasana, and teach this leg from rotating out, and teach a neutral leg. This is actually, I do this in my 2-3 level classes, this is hard.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then they could learn how to twist against the wall. And it's nice to do these because these stabilize you. If you're having trouble in some poses, use walls, you know, and props and stuff. It adds flavor to your classes too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, today we're just gonna use the wall for everything. It's like, oh, okay, cool. Sounds like fun. You could do chair pose against the wall. Remember that teacher I was telling you guys about that does like two poses? She'd have us stand at the wall, your feet a little bit away from the wall, and then just do this forward folds with the wheel of the pelvis. You keep your sit bones on the wall, keep your sit bones on the wall, keep your sit bones on the wall, and then we add blocks, and we do forward folds against the wall. And then we come up, and then we bend our knees and come into chair pose. You know, these are all for injury management, because you got the wall to stabilize you there. So that could be a way that you start to really practice some of these poses so you feel them in your body, like what your body's doing in space as you're bending forward. Oh, my sit bones have to stay against the wall, my sit bones are staying against the wall. This is work, this is a lot of belly work, core work, all the way down. Okay, so I'm just giving you kind of examples of things that you can do. I don't know if you do this in gentle yoga, wall work.
I've not.
Just use yoga floor?
Well, I don't do gentle yoga.
Oh, I thought you
I
did
haven't.
Gentle.
It's been, well, no, I. It's been forever since I've done it.
Okay. So you do restorative yoga, you said.
Just
or
here?
Or sun yoga.
No.
No?
The only thing I've been doing recently
yeah.
is a very specific routine for herniated discs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
For some reason, I
prefer
okay.
restorative.
You
when
prefer.
I, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Just because my, you know, it just
yeah.
feels so good to have your body release
yeah.
and you're in chronic pain. So.
Yeah. You guys will probably do, well, I don't know, Natalie might teach at chair yoga, too.
Yeah, yeah that's what
I'm
so, thinking I'm
yeah.
interested
yeah.
in.
I'd love to have a wall class
yeah?
with you
okay.
someday. Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be so
we
great.
Could do a wall class for
yeah.
sure.
The restorative class here at the studio does use a wall a lot.
They do?
Yeah. And sometimes in gentle too, I take that too.
Uh-huh. Okay, good.
Yes,
yeah.
They do
good.
Some.
Yeah, it's really valuable to do that. Let's take a, I can see everybody's face is fading. Okay. Let's do a little, go to the bathroom, a little, I like to shave, I'm fine.
Real quick, how many, like, Lisa, how many classes do you do in a day?
1 to 2.
What, is there like a recommendation of like, hey, you probably should?
I always say one class a week won't really do much for you.
Right.
2 to 3 is like the kind of average practitioner. And then when you get to like 4 and 5, we would start to really see a lot of changes in your body.
But doing multiple classes in a day, like, I'm assuming.
Well, it's like breathe and restore, and then yin. It's not like a 2 yin class.
Yeah.
My heart day is actually 2 yin.
So, pick your poison, right? My practice is just an hour in the morning. So I don't do even an hour and a half in the morning.
Nicole?
Yeah.
When you say firm the hips, are we talking about the glutes?
So we have a pressing towards
the
mats. And then you have the glute meads, which are actually a smaller muscle that's closer to the hip.
Uh-huh.
So not the glute max.
Okay.
But the glute meads.
Uh-huh.
The outer hips.
Interesting.
Okay. Yeah, slightly different.
And can you find that by pressing the outer edge of the foot in? Does that activate a little bit? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm constantly eating. I'm like one of those. Are you like that too?
Uh-huh.
I'm like.
Speaking of which.
Huh?
Speaking of which.
Mm-hmm. I'll make nuts anyway.
Yeah. I like hummingbirds.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, we'll do a practice. I think that'll be helpful.
Strap
and
turn that down.
I know, right? What was that? I wouldn't, but that's just me.
Wouldn't we?
Obsessed with them. Claire's Sage is really good for your hips. So I always put it on my pelvis, and it actually takes away pelvic pain for me. I put it on my sacrum. And my glutes. This is where I usually put my pain now.
Yeah, what's that?
This one's citrus. It's good for the heart.
I have a pretty good space for practicing
joy out.
You do.
You know,
about my
you use the citrus blizzard box.
Yeah.
So I'm going to put it in
the box.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
I only have one because
I'll give you my number, but this is going to be really
good. Citrus would be for, for me.
Yeah.
I've done them. I always use Clary Sage on my pelvis. Uh-huh. It's like definitely clears out, like lower spine. And yeah.
You're welcome.